We have to leave right now. We can't wait. If we just hang around, we're all going to die. Those were the thoughts of a man about to drown in the deepest cave in the world. Well, before he and one other guy took off and left the people they were with. Now, obviously, that's not the full story, and I'll explain more. But first, I will explain something else. The deepest cave in the world isn't fully open to just anyone for obvious reasons. But the stories I'm about to tell you all happened with people who probably shouldn't have been in the cave at all. It ranges from a very experienced caver to a husband taking a trip he told absolutely no one about. I'm Tatiana Bunch, and this is Occurrence. Before I get into it, all sources can be found at occurrencepod.com, which is linked in the show notes, along with social media and other relevant information. In September of 2018, two National Geographic photographers named Robbie Schoen and Jeff Wade decided to tag along on a Russian expedition to explore the current holder for the world's deepest cave. They were both Brits living abroad and were going to take pictures, explore, and just do what people who work for National Geographic do. The cave is named Veryovkina Cave, and it's in Abkhazia, which may or may not belong to the country of Georgia. Abkhazia declared their independence from Georgia, but it seems like some countries recognize its independence and others don't. Georgia still claims it and says it's Russian-occupied territory, but that's not my wheelhouse, so do with that information what you will. Veryovkina itself is almost 7,300 feet deep, or 2,200 meters, and its entrance is almost 7,500 feet above sea level because it's in the Gagra mountain range. And the actual entrance shaft goes down like 100 of those 7,000 plus feet. Over the years, after its discovery in 1968, it's been regularly surveyed and got its title of being the deepest cave in the world in 2017. It's also the deepest accessible without diving equipment, which is probably how what ends up happening happened. The group surveying and mapping the cave were the Porovo Spilio Club and Porovo Spilio Team. For the sake of not being confusing, I'm just going to refer to both groups as just PST. And the leader of PST was Pavel Demidov. He was born in Moscow in 1971, and after graduating in sea navigation, there were no jobs. Sounds familiar? So he jumped around a bit before getting into industrial rope access. Over the years, he fell in love with caving and enrolled in caving schools. And Pavel and two other friends founded PST. They started working in Veryovkina in 2000 when it was only thought to be 1,500 feet deep. Over the years, PST excavated and surveyed the cave, abandoning it a few times before going back and continuing their work. It was Pavel and eight members of PST that Robbie and Jeff were going to join. March 2nd of 2018, Pavel and PST found a terminal sump at the water table that was just thousands of feet of flooded passage right at the bottom of the cave. Their goal for the September trip was to explore those new passages at the bottom of Veryovkina and collect samples of shrimp and scorpions that they found in case they were a newly discovered species. They wanted Robbie to take pictures and document the entire cave, including the sump at the bottom. So they all began the journey to the bottom of the deepest cave in the world, and it was a lot. It took 4 days to make it to the bottom, and thousands of feet of rope. They had to crawl through water and mud and carry heavy gear bags, and they had to carry those heavy gear bags caked in mud and squeezed through the smallest of spaces. Inside of deep caves, just like on high mountains, there are camps set up at various points throughout for teams to rest, eat, recover, and sleep. The lowest camp in Veryovkina was at 7,200 feet, and it was a horizontal tunnel that was sandy. After the four-day journey, they spent 3 days camped out at that lowest camp. From there, they would leave to go explore the new tunnels. collect the potentially new discovered species, and of course, Robbie and Jeff took pictures of everything. While they were there, two members from the PST left early because they needed to catch a flight back home. I'm sure they were excited to be heading out after 7 days underground. And lucky they did, because as they were leaving, they made it to the camp that was set up at the halfway point in Beryovkina. They had around 4,000 feet to go when they saw a flood pulse. So immediately, they tapped into the cable wire that they installed in the cave to warn everyone who was still exploring at 6,000 or 7,000 feet down. They were smart enough to install the communication system because of how often and quickly flood pulses can happen. They happen due to heavy rain causing water to collect, and once it reaches a certain volume, it bursts through the cave openings. They eventually stop, but can last anywhere from a few minutes to several hours. But at first, they weren't too concerned. Pavel and his team were used to this type of thing after all. Besides, where the camp was adjacent to the main vertical shaft, so they weren't concerned. Pavel cooked breakfast. It was a pasta and meat dish with vacuum-sealed ingredients. Some cavers had finished eating and some had just started, when 30 minutes after receiving that call, everyone heard the rumbling of flood waters and rushed out of their tents as the ground started to shake and saw a wall of white water shoot out of the opening past their camp. And it was a ridiculous amount of water. But the water wasn't hitting them and their camp was completely dry. So in their minds, they were in a safe spot. The minutes started passing, turning into hours. About 2 hours after the flood pulse started, someone heard a quiet sound. It was a gurgling noise, but it was so quiet that only one person heard it. So he went to check it out. He started walking around and realized it was coming from next to their tent. That gurgling was just noise. There wasn't any water. But considering how long the flood pulse had been going, and it was still going and didn't slow down at all, he decided to tell Pavel about the noise. Pavel agreed with his concern and asked a few of the members to help him check out a nearby siphon. He wanted to see how high the water table was now. So Pavel and the others left and were gone for like 5 minutes when the member who originally found the gurgling noise decided to go check on it again. He went back beside the tent and saw water shooting up so fast it was hitting the walls. He looked at Robbie and his face was so white, Robbie thought, "Oh my goodness, we have to leave right now. We can't wait. If we just hang around, we're all going to die." And then the water started getting stronger. The sound was so loud, they could barely hear anything else. And everyone started scrambling because they weren't expecting to leave camp that day. Nothing was packed. Robbie and Jeff, who were already wearing a fleece base layer, threw on their latex suits as fast as they could and helped each other twist shut the parts at the neck, wrist, and ankles so that it could keep the water out. Then they threw on their abrasion-resistant nylon shells, and then their harnesses, helmets, and whatever gear they needed to get back up the thousands of feet of rope ahead of them. And then Robbie had to make the choice to abandon tens of thousands of dollars worth of camera gear. It was his work camera gear, his personal gear, all of it, because he had to climb up a mile of rope as fast as he could, and he could not be slowed down by a heavy bag. It could absolutely be the difference between life and death. So he made sure to grab his camera's flashcards and throw them into a Ziploc bag that he shoved inside of his waterproof suit. So not all was lost. But he turns to get ready to leave, and he can't find Jeff. So Robbie starts yelling for Jeff. "Jeff, come on. We have to leave now." And Jeff, who was in the dark somewhere, yelled back that he was coming before he turned to the member of PST who found the spewing water and yelled, "We're leaving. We're getting out of here now." And he yelled back, "Go. I'll wait for Pavel." And they didn't need to hear any more. Robbie and Jeff were gone. They got on those ropes and started going up in a hurry. But they hit a shaft that, on the way down, was 26 feet wide and 65 feet deep, open and airy. And now it was completely filled with water. But Robbie didn't waste any time, and he got to the vertical ropes at the end of the shaft. He saw the waterfall coming out and probably said a prayer before he clipped his ascender to the rope, put his head down, and started climbing. Right before the water hit him, he took a deep breath and held it. And the force of the water hit him so hard, he felt like his head was being squashed into his shoulders. He kept his chin tucked and breathed the little air he could get from the pocket formed in the space under the brim of his helmet. He went as fast as he could, a little at a time, and only able to barely see the white rope directly in front of him. He was talking to himself, saying, "Just keep going." He made it to a point where there was a nook for him to step aside, a little, and he looked up to see how much he had left to go. Of course, he couldn't see beyond the narrow tunnel that was only body-sized. The floodwater was flying out of that worse than the more open section below, and Robbie could only go, "You're joking. There's no air, no space, there's nothing. How am I supposed to get out?" And then he realized he had no choice but to keep going, because he was in front. Literally, everyone would be coming up after him if they made it. He wasn't far enough yet. He wasn't high enough to be safe, and he could block up everyone after him if he didn't move. So Robbie had to keep going. And he did. He forced himself into the now chimney-like shaft, and the water just beat on him. He could only push his ascender up a few inches at a time, and the water was too strong to move any more than that. He tried to take a few sips of air when he could, and struggled inch by inch to get out. When he made it out, all he could think of was, "I hope Jeff can do that," because Robbie relied on his rope technique from his actual job as a window washer. Photography was just a hobby for him, but all he wanted to do was get out of there, so he kept going. He was panicking and climbing and didn't realize it until he reached a dry section where the flood veered in a different direction. And then he heard Jeff yelling below. He was yelling at Robbie to slow down because they were safe. And I guess he had been yelling for a minute before Robbie actually heard, because he sounded angry by the time Robbie registered it. So Robbie found a place where they would both be able to sit and wait. And when he looked at Jeff, Jeff's face was white and his eyes were huge. They were just grateful to be alive. And then they remembered the Russians below and had no idea if they were okay too. After a while, Robbie and Jeff climbed up to a camp at around 2,600 feet, where there was a tent with food and medical supplies. And they kind of just sat there, waiting to see if the PST made it as the ground shook from the flood below. Eventually, they saw a headlamp appear, and the PST member who found the gurgling came up. Jeff asked him if he saw the others, and he just said no in return. All three sat in silence, hoping for the best, but fearing the worst. After another 15 minutes, they saw more headlamps before the five remaining PST members appeared, including Pavel. Robbie was in awe and disbelief, because not only did they save themselves, they brought up a stove, sleeping bags, and a brew kit. And all he thought about was his pictures. Apparently, Pavel and the others got out just in time, because when they got back from checking the siphon, everything was completely submerged, and they had to swim to get to the ropes going through that big open shaft. One of the members got caught in an eddy and started spinning like he was getting flushed down a toilet, and he almost wasn't able to make it to the line because of that. But a little after getting up there and settling down and making coffee, the Russians started laughing about it. Robbie couldn't relate, though, and was still anxious. He refused to take his caving gear off, and he refused to sleep. He could still hear the flood roaring down below, and he couldn't help but to keep peering over the ledge at their camp to see if the water was rising below. He was also nervous about the pseudo-siphon a couple hundred feet above them. It was a long horizontal tunnel that you had to crawl through, and on a normal day, it was halfway filled with water, but the flood would have it completely filled with water, so they were trapped and dead if the water down below reached them. They all spent the next 16 hours at camp, and the flood pulse lasted a total of 20. It happened because it had actually been raining for a week, the entire time they were down there. The Russians thought the cave only flooded in the winter, which they obviously now knew wasn't true. But they made plans to improve monitoring what's happening on the surface and improve communication. They also installed a new camp in the lowest chamber as another escape spot in case of another flood. Overall, the trip was a success. They only had to cut it short by a day. And I will tell you what ended up happening to Pavel after this next story. In November 2020, a 37-year-old man named Sergey K. left for a trip. He lived in a village in the Sochi district and was married with two children. That morning, he said goodbye to his family and didn't say much else, but he got in his car like it was a normal day before driving to Abkhazia. He got out of his car and climbed up to an entrance well in the Verevkina village, hung up a rope, and descended inside. He put all of his stuff into three transport bags and went on his merry way. I'm not sure if he was completely alone in there, because reportedly there were workers in the cave, people to help transport stuff and things like that. But in Camp 380, he abandoned the one transport worker that was with him and went down to Camp 600. No one knew he was there, and actually he stayed there for a week. He lived down there alone, eating food and ketchup stocked up there and using the stored gas. Now, this sounds wild, right? Like, after my last story where experienced people made it out of the cave alive by the skin on their teeth, and the inexperienced people only made it out because they didn't wait, like to wake up one morning and just decide to go into the deepest cave in the world and not tell anyone, because he didn't tell his family. They had no idea what happened to him. So they filed a missing persons announcement after he didn't come home. Well, the gag is, Sergey had actually been planning this raid for over a year. He was using diagrams on his phone to navigate that he got from Wikipedia and Pavel's reports. That's how he knew how to sneak down there and what camps were where and what supplies would be there. Now, Sergey was having the time of his life. Off the grid, family unable to report where he's at, and just living out his exploring dream. At some point during his time in solitude, he decided he wanted to go lower and see more. So he went down to 3,600 feet. At this point in the cave, things aren't submerged, but they are wetter and it starts to get very, very cold. There are horizontal railings set up to lead people away from the water, but if you don't have the right training and experience and equipment for the environment change, you're in trouble. Sergey hooked himself up to the railing without stirrups. He was about 10 feet up from the bottom of the ledge, and he got stuck. On that ledge was a transport vehicle, two phones, and a multi-tool. And that's where he would stay until he died. Since he snuck in and went down lower than what he should have, where anyone was at, no one knew he was there. It wouldn't be until August 4th, 2021, that an expedition team stumbled upon him still hanging there. He was only wearing camouflage cotton overalls and boots. They could tell he passed away about a year prior to being found, and he violated a lot of the rules for single rope climbing, including where and how he hung his ropes. They found a backpack belonging to him that had moldy sneakers, new crampons, and trekking poles at the bottom of the entrance well. He didn't have any documents identifying who he was, so a search organization was contacted to identify him. They found the missing person announcement, and the pictures of Sergey from that announcement looked like a picture of the man on his phone. And when they showed his family members the belongings that they found, they identified them as his too. His wife asked them to bring his remains out of the cave, and organizations with experience moving poorly preserved remains were brought in to help with it. I'm sorry, in all due respect to him and his family and his friends, but I can't wrap my head around his thought process. Like, actually, because if he at least told someone even how long he would have been gone for, and maybe a little about where he was going, illegal or not, it's possible he would have been saved, or at least just not there for as long, with his family wondering what happened to him. Now, I told you there was more to Pavel's story, and there is. In 2020, because of COVID-19, cave expeditions to deep caves on Arabica were canceled through the summer. But when the border reopened that August, a few expeditions took place. Pavel joined Kavek's team expedition to a cave named Integral. It was north of Veryovkina and about 7,500 feet above sea level, with a depth of 650 feet at the time. Pavel and another explorer were at the last explored point in the cave. They made it about 1,000 feet deep when they came to a twist. The twist started as a narrow passage with boulders and rocks at the bottom from what appeared to be a rockfall. They both easily passed through it, though, and ended up on a small ledge. Pavel decided to turn back to grab rope for them to descend down beyond the ledge. And while he did, the other explorer stayed and started clearing the stones. After a while of moving the rocks around, he started wondering what was taking Pavel so long. So he decided to turn back and see what was going on. On his way back, he saw a new pile of clay and stones. And when he got closer, he saw Pavel underneath it. There were no signs of life. A huge recovery operation was launched, and Pavel was removed from the cave September 1st and airlifted to Moscow the following day. And those are the tragedies associated with the world's deepest cave. Let me know your thoughts and stay safe. I'll be back next Thursday.